Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
We are the younger generation. We are the ones who are going to be affected, and therefore we demand justice.
What do we want?
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now! Hood Strike. Podcast supporting the global climate strike.
Everyone should mobilise for the 20th of September, because this is a global issue which actually affects everyone. We are all in the same boat, so everyone should be concerned about this.
I'm striking because if we don't fight for our future now, soon we won't have a future left to fight for.
I support the climate strikes to push climate leaders to act for a brighter future for everyone.
I'm joining the strikes because I believe it's time to resist and to take charge of the future that belongs to us, not to the fossil fuel companies.
I'm joining the climate strikes to seek equality for the next generation.
We need you to be a part of it because we need every age involved. Young people have been leading here, but now it's the job of the rest of us to back them up.
This shouldn't be the children's responsibility, because now the adults also need to help us. So we are calling for them to strike from their work, because we need everyone. There is nothing we can't do, and I mean, if not you should do it, then who else? And if not we should do it now, then when should we do it?
This podcast is part of Podstrike, supporting Greta Thunberg and the young people behind the global climate strike on the 20th of September. For more information, head to globalclimatestrike.net.
Hello and welcome to Your Book, the podcast for literary nosy Parkers. I'm Daisy Buchanan, your host and the author of The Sisterhood, a love letter to the women who shape me. If you're on the Kent coast, come and buy it from the Margate Bookshop, my lovely local. This has been the week that The Testaments came out, and I nearly had a serious and embarrassing accident after being startled by a truly frightening handmade mannequin in the window of Smith's Travel at Euston Station. Also this week, we have yet another fabulous guest for you. The novelist, comedian, actor, presenter, the host of the Older and Wider podcast, and grumpy old woman, Jenny Eclair. Jenny's fifth novel, Inheritance, was published by Sphere last month. It's the story of Belle, her complicated relationship with her adoptive family, and the spell of Kittiwake, the Cornish mansion that has a strange pull on guests past and present, despite, or perhaps because of its connections with mystery and tragedy. I loved Inheritance because I love books about families, especially family stories where love isn't a given, tenderness is complicated, loyalty makes life painful, and people who are expected to love each other struggle even to like each other. Jenny talked about her favourite genre of literature, also mine, push people behaving badly, about the health issues that have changed the way she reads, listening to books at bedtime with her partner Jeff, and how her daughter has influenced her literary habits.
So, okay, so we're sitting on my sofa and I have given you my cracked iPad to show you my Audible library because of my dry eye syndrome, which is the dullest disease in the world, and I'll very quickly tell you about it. Dry eye is something that's very common in women in menopause years. It comes like that and it doesn't go away and it's a drag. And it means my eyeballs dry out very, very quickly. And when they dry out, I find small print very difficult. So I save all my eye juice and writing for my work. I work in a font size 20. I don't know what you're in.
Wow. 20 well, is
yes,
quite...
Yes, big, isn't it?
So, also, that's great because you must look at it and think, oh, I've done loads.
Yes, I know. I'm pages in. So most of my leisure reading is now on the iPad as Audible. So, and Audible's just, you know, gone through the roof.
How long can you write for? Does it depend on the day? Or...
Oh, no, I can write for hours. I mean, you know, I was told by Moorfields not to sort of think that I was going blind or anything like that. It's not that. It's a discomfort thing. I think it's probably as bad as people with very bad hay fever. And you can have a procedure that helps for about 10 months, but it's very expensive. Anyway, I'm saving up. But we've just got to buy a new car because somebody wrote ours off and blah, blah. It's so dull.
Okay.
But you get used to stuff, don't you? And I do drops and I do things and it's all right. I mean, everybody, I'm nearly 60, you know, things start to go wrong. And, you know, lots of people are dead by this age. So you just kind of get on with it. So at the moment, Jeff's my partner, we have a book that we go to bed with. We have a bedtime story. It's what happens when you've been together for 36 years.
Oh, I think that's lovely. I've tried that with producer Dale and he's having none of it.
Really, really. It's a very difficult thing to do. You have to find your crossover in the Venn diagram of books you can both bear. But we actually, we're both really enjoying Sweet Sorrow by David Nichols because... It's a book that I think appeals to women in particular, but it's very funny. And it's very, very well done by Roy Kinnear, who's acting up a storm in it. So you're getting kind of more for your buck, I think. That doesn't happen with every Audible book, but I think the David Nichols is a case in sort of, you know, you are getting a treat on Audible.
Because I love Sweet Sorrow. I would... I read it, but now you're making me want to listen to it too. But it's that very, very clever evoking of nostalgia, but also something, that bittersweet part of it, and remembering the past is an imperfect time. And I think it's one of the best party scenes I've read in ages when they're all around the pool.
I'm not there.
Don't do that.
We've only just started it. But because I've sort of come from a vaguely theatrical background, on the floor dying, she's just put a glass of water on my sofa and it'll go over.
I really
like the language of the sort of, you know, the ghastly theatrical... it's like an Amdram company for young people. That is really making me laugh. And it's showing, you know, because David Nichols was an actor himself. Also on the go, I've got Expectation, which I think is probably aimed more at your generation than mine. But I really like it.
It's possibly having the three women and Expectation and all of those different
voices.
The flipping and the waiting. And there seems to be...
It's more rounded for me.
More rounded, more subtle, more complicated.
I'm worried about Dale.
Like
he's standing up.
That's all right.
And I think he should sit down. Do you want to just drag a chair over?
Yeah.
We'll shout until you get back. Thank you. This
is a beautiful chair.
I stole it from Bristol Old Vic.
Really?
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, these used to be the seats in the studio at Bristol Old Vic, and they were getting rid of them all.
Beautiful. It's got like an amazing bright yellow, like a New York taxi cab colour, just because
we're not on television, are we? In my head, everything's television.
And a black, is that
it's a folder, probably 50s chair. Anyway, it came from Bristol Old Vic and they were the seats for the studio and they've had a refurb, they were getting rid of them all. And I was on tour and I was doing Bristol Old Vic and unfortunately between two of us, me and my tour manager, we could only fit that one in the car. So there we go.
Skipping back to Sweet Sorrow, I wanted to ask, did you do much Amdram before you went fully dram?
No, darling, I'm proper. I'm trained. You know, I'm highly trained. I went to drama school. I could have been.
Before drama school, in your youth?
No. But this is, I mean, they're not really an Amdram. They're a young people's theatre company called Full Fathom Five. it's toe-curlingly, comedically grotesque, which is great. You know, I come from a drama school background. I don't come from an academic background whatsoever. I don't have a degree.
So here we've got Fleischmann is in Trouble, which I've not read yet and I'm desperate to read. Is it...
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
Sorry.
Ooh, what don't you like about it? No one ever says it. I love it when people say that.
I'm going to go back to it, but I started it last week and I just got irritated by him. And I just don't think I was in the mood for it. So everybody's raving about it. I will go back to it. I'm not writing it off. It just wasn't my cup of tea last week.
Do you think that with an audiobook, they're sort of more, you've got to be in the mood for something more.
Possibly. Voices, but it's well done. It's nothing to do with the voice. Occasionally the voices do annoy me. But I just, it's at the beginning is a lot about sex and I'm not really very interested. And it just goes on a bit and I just, I don't know. It's just not a life that I know very much about and or very interested in.
That makes sense. And I wonder whether when you hear someone speaking it, it's much harder to sort of to fit
sympathize,
yourself in somehow than it is if it's just words on a page.
Yes.
Not just a half a theory. I don't know.
Well, I'll give it. I'm going to give it another go because it is getting, you know, all the attention and people saying it is the book of the summer.
Do you think
that's
off-putting?
Ever an
element of...
I want my book to be the book of the summer. I don't want his book to be the...
Everybody,
actually, who is it? Taffy. It's a girl, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want her book to be the book of the summer.
I thought you were going to say, oh, you know, we must support women in literature. No.
We
will come to this, but obviously The Inheritance by Jenny Eclair should be the book of the summer because it's excellent. It's even though it's a big, heavy hardback and I have read it, I might take it on holiday when I go and then, because I can see people, you know, sometimes there is a book that really gets passed around the pool and you know exactly what people are reading and where they're up to because of the way they gasp and laugh and kind of wrinkle at their faces in shock.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of moments where it does sort of turn a bit and, you know, and people go, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. Have you ever read any John Niven?
Yes.
You see, I think he's hilarious. That's another that Jeff and I share. We really laugh at John Niven. I've got quite a sort of bleak, dark humour thing going on. And John Niven is repulsive. I mean, his characters are the worst. And I really, really enjoy them. That Straight White Male, which is the... it's not his most recent, but that's the most recent one I've listened to. And he never fails to make me absolutely hoot. That's the sort of author that appeals to the stand-up side to me, the very sweary kind of rock and roll-y kind of drug-taking, heavy drinking thing.
And how do you and Jeff choose? Do you sort of, does one of you say that you're the person
I choose?
And how?
I wouldn't trust him.
Is there anything that you thought he'd love and he's just sort of gone, no, this is not for me at all?
Yeah, An American Marriage. He couldn't get into that, which I loved. I really, really...
That's the one that won the Women's Prize.
Yeah, yes, and it's a great book.
But you've been a judge on that, haven't you? Were you a judge this year?
Years ago. It was one Zadie Smith won.
What's that like? Because I mean, you must have... my friend Dolly did it this year, and she said that she sort of... I think she nearly got the dry eye thing. I think she read about 800 books or something.
Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, it really is. I mean, I would say... Because I've just done one for Helen Ledger's New Quip Prize, which is the Comedy Woman in Print.
And former guest.
I did struggle with the amount of reading with that, and I had to sort of blow things up, and oh, yeah, it was hard. I will refuse that again, I'm afraid.
Well, that's
when the book had come scratching on my door.
I know, the Pulitzer people hounding you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, no, I'm not going to do it. So there's lots of things here that I think
are... Loads of here, I see... After the End.
Which is the new Claire McIntosh, which is a real sort of heartbreaker. I mean, it's about, a parents and a very poorly child and a court case over, you know, letting him die. I think it's based on a real life thing. But I'm fond of Claire McIntosh. I admire her. I think that she really, really fulfills a kind of niche for people. And I think people love her stuff. I've got some odd things on there as well. You know, An Unsuitable Woman was just a very... Kat Gordon isn't well known or anything, but I love things about the Happy Valley set. So this is, I mean, there are a few things that I will read over and over and over again. You know, if it's about badly behaved rich people, I'm kind of there.
Oh, that is a strong, strong genre.
How do
you feel? Have you, did you like Edward St. Albans? What's it called?
Yes, I haven't read the novels, but I, because David Nichols did the screenplays, didn't he? I was on tour and I found them really difficult to watch because I felt like a junkie. I don't know whether you've ever got that thing where you start to feel like the character in the book. And I started to feel really sick and not very well in hotel rooms and worry about how much I was drinking and that sort of thing.
That's interesting. Because that bit where he is... And that weird logic as well, which, I've
the drunken
never taken
logic.
Heroin, but I can sort of relate to you where he's like, well, if I take all of my heroin now,
I
won't have to take it later.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It doesn't make sense.
That whole sequence of events, and it made me really, really... feel anxious. I had to sort of stop watching it, but I think it's a great piece of work. This is a fabulous book that I cannot recommend enough, After the Party by Cressida Connolly. Do you know her?
Oh, I've heard about that book.
It's wonderful because it's about, again, posh people, 30s. It's about a couple who's been working abroad. They come home and live near her sister. And it's a little bit Mitford's. In fact, it's very much Mitford's. And it's about how she accidentally falls in with Oswald Mosley's kind of clan. It's wonderful. It really, really
that
is.
Sounds it's so far up, up my alley.
Yeah,
I need an operation.
I cannot recommend that. I know you would love that.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Can you remember the first book that you read where you sort of thought, whoa, this is for me? Like the first book that wasn't given to you that you found yourself.
The L-Shaped Room by Lynn Reed Banks, which I probably read when I was about 12 or 13. And it was about a single girl getting pregnant, living in a sort of dodgy flat. And that was like the first adult book that kind of really hit home. You know, and I always liked an element of that kitchen sinky sort of thing. I like either rich people behaving badly or the seamy kind of life. I don't like nice people particularly leading ordered, well-mannered lives.
I think that's what I loved so much about The Inheritance, because there is so much of that sort of, you know, sketchiness and the, you know, people doing absolutely dreadful things to each other and thinking, if I just put this veneer on top, if I tell myself that everything's okay, and that awful, awful, that character, Natasha, and her marriage.
Yeah.
And that she described all these awful things. And then she said, you know, it was such a shock because, you know, she'd been so happily married and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ooh, no, that's what she's telling herself. But, it's...
They're all deeply flawed people, and I think that that's, you know, that's what I write, though. You know, other people don't. So, you know, these would all these books would be on shelves.
Oh, and there's The Pursuit of Love. Oh, and narrated by Amelia Fox. I bet that's lovely.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, you know, An Old Filth, which is a great book by Jane Gardam. Yes, that's another of our joint nighttime readings. I think Jeff actually enjoyed it a bit more than I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it's a male narrator, really. It's about an old man and his life. It's beautifully, beautifully written.
I think Jane Gardam is one of my favourite ever Desert Island Discs guests.
Oh, really?
I think hers
I haven't heard that one.
Great. I think this is right. I might have to check this, but her story is that she... Because it was, you know, writing in the time when you had your single manuscript and, you know, obviously you didn't sort of email it to anyone and you had the one copy that's quite expensive to print. And so calling the publishers. And I think it was a children's book she'd written and them saying, well, if you're not going to do it, can I have it back? And then just by chance, they looked at it and they said, I'll give that stupid woman back a manuscript. And then, oh, there might be something here. Maybe we'll publish this.
Really?
But only because she called a day.
It's, I mean, I don't know how people used to write. I mean, we're so lucky nowadays, aren't we? Because I do remember computers coming in. I mean, I got a computer to write my first book, which was a comedy book called The Book of Bad Behaviour in about 93, 94. And that was when the Apple Mac had just come out.
You had to have a whole separate room for it.
Well, more or less. I mean, it was better than the PC. I mean, they always have been. I'm a Mac user. But I remember the publishers saying, you do have a word processor, don't you? And I went, yes, of course I do. Of course I never did, but I got one. And, you know, that was a whole new world. Because before that, I'd had an electric typewriter. It was quite a fancy one. Yeah, it wasn't just a normal sort of tap, tap, tap one. It was electric, so it was quite fast. And you could see the words coming up in a little dot matrix screen. It was an odd little thing. I wish I had still had it because it would be such a weird thing now for younger writers to look at.
I think my mum had... Well, I know my dad got a really posh electric typewriter.
Yeah.
And I remember it being kind of... Not quite being able to understand what the point of it was.
Yes,
but it didn't seem that different from a regular
typewriter. No, it wasn't, but it was a bit cleverer.
It did seem a bit fancier. What was it like that writing that first book? Did you grow up believing you would write novels one day, or did you have to do a mental switch to kind of from...
Well, the first books weren't novels. The first book came from being a stand-up and having a reputation for being kind of quite wild. And so I was approached by Virgin at the time, had a publishing company, and they wanted a book about behaving badly. And it was just, I mean, literally, I don't think it was 50,000 words. It had loads of photos and stuff like that, lots of illustration. I mean, I was 34. So, I mean, I thought it was a huge deal. And I thought it was the most exhausting thing I'd ever do. Of course, I looked at it now, it looks like a pamphlet. You know, it's just, there's barely anything in it at all. And my own daughter's 30. If she churned out a piece of rubbish like that, I'd go, oh, Phoebe, come on. That was the first one. I didn't know at that point it would go to novels, no, because at the same time, I was doing quite a lot of radio drama, so I was writing narrative as radio comedy drama.
Did it seem... Because I know sometimes... Have you been... Because people either compartmentalise and think, well, I can do that, that's easy, but I couldn't possibly do this other thing. Or have you always been quite, well, no, if I can write, I can write whatever.
Things fell oddly into place, just accidentally. It all came from the stand-up. I'd done a stand-up show called Dear Jenny, Dear Julie, which was with, you know, one of my best friends, Julie Ballou. And somebody came to see us in Edinburgh and said, oh, I think there's a radio series in this, because Julie's Australian and I'm not. So we wrote a comedy drama that was based on pen pal letters, where I pretended to her that I was much more successful than I was, so she came over to stay and all that kind of thing. And so that, we started writing together, and from that we wrote another quite successful radio series called On Baby Street, which did about four series, which was about three or four pregnant women down the same street, all in very different circumstances. And that ran for, quite a long time. Had some really big names in it, you know, like Kathy Burke and Frances Barber and Keith Allen and, Caroline Ahern. You know, lovely Caroline. Yeah, it was like a mad time. We were sort of, Julie and I couldn't believe our luck at sort of the people we had playing the parts. It was great.
We're going to seek that out in the archive, because that sounds really good.
It was always cropping up on, that...
Four Extra?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
I get repeat fees for, like, 37p every now and again.
I've just seen, I'm flicking down here, I've seen Stone Mothers.
I'm a big Erin Kelly fan. I think she's
another
great.
Guest of the...
I think she's underrated. I don't think she's as famous as she should be, and I don't understand why not.
It's that book especially. I love the emotional complexity of it, that was more of rather than kind of the terrible thing happened. Mm. It's about the impact it has on people who are living
and
having relationships
really clever,
in a very relatable
way. I think what's really brilliant about Erin Kelly is that she manages to completely change her voice with every book. Mm. They're so different. There's nothing that really, that you go, oh, here she goes again with her usual thing. It's not.
Because that must be very hard as well when you've had a lot of... And I think, you know, she has had books that, you know, have done really well.
Very,
yeah.
Very well.
And to not repeat that.
Absolutely.
To keep taking risks.
I mean, I just think that, if I'd written He Said, She Said and had the success she did with that, I think I'd have taken 3 years off. But that's what... I'm not a writer in the way that a lot of novelists are. I cannot emotionally cope with starting another book again. I really can't. You know, Inheritance I finished in about April, and I wouldn't dream of trying to start another novel until maybe 2 years has passed. I can't.
I'm not absolutely sure about this, and I can't remember who it is, which doesn't help. But it's either Anthony Trollope, or it's Thomas Hardy, or it's someone else who would do their... would always write religiously from, like, 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock. And if they finished a book at 4:45, they would start the next book. I think that's insane and horrible, and it makes me want to...
Yeah, that makes me sweat.
Griffith...
There's kind of, where's your celebration? Where's your reward? It's not. I'm not a machine. I don't know.
I only do anything so I can get to the end and have some time off.
Well, I've also sort of emotionally invested a lot of time with these people, and I've just had to put them to one side, and I can't get their voices out of my head like that.
You've got to kind of, they're like almost like living ghosts, aren't they?
Yeah,
you've got to
get
let
rid of them.
Have their passage.
Go now.
I've just spotted What a Car That by Jonathan Coe.
Yes.
Now, dangerous territory. Don't know how you'll feel about this, because that is sort of just in something about tone and the way it made me feel. That's what The Inheritance reminded me of.
Well, oddly enough, that's my least favourite Coe book.
Oh!
Not that I've read them all.
This is why you shouldn't compare writers to other writers. It always goes badly.
I don't mind being compared to Jonathan Coe. Jeff really loved that. That was another of our nighttime sharers. I preferred... his most recent book, Middle England, is just a brilliant look at England through a really kind of wise eye and how we got to Brexit. I think it should be required reading up and down the country for absolutely everybody, Brexiteer or Remainer. I think it's a marvellously clever book, I really do.
A book I really loved in a similar vein that you might like is This Green and Pleasant Land by Ayesha Malik.
I have
come
heard
across
of this.
That,
yes.
But it's that similar sort. It's all about what happens when a very, very, very anglicised Asian man who lives with his family in a sweet little village, I think in Dorset, and they're very much kind of a part of the community. His mother's dying wish is that he build a mosque there, and he doesn't really want to, but he feels too guilty not to.
Yeah.
And when that happens, he discovers all the sort of the friendships and relationships he thought he could rely on. Everything turns a bit sour and goes a bit weird,
because
and discovers
that
everyone's
not one of them.
Yeah, that sort of Brexitiness that lurks on the surface. But then there's other really surprising sweetnesses and people, the worst people, unexpectedly bringing out the best of them. But it's very smart and kind of gentle but biting.
Okay.
Really
there's so many good books.
There's so many books.
There really is. So many good books.
The Line of Beauty.
That's probably one of my favourite books ever. I had a very bad sort of depression a few months ago, and that saw me through. That absolutely, I think it's fantastically written. I think it's probably the only Booker Prize winner that I've managed to get through.
Oh, I quite like Milkman.
I haven't read that.
It's
with my ears.
But this is so, I just think there's a real kind of expansiveness of it.
Yeah, it's
really
big.
See, and again, push people behaving badly.
Yeah, really. But it's so grown up. It's so, it's just, you know, it's, yeah, I think that was Daisy Jones and the Six. I would not like to read that as a book, but as an audio, it is fantastic because it's a production.
Ooh.
I think it would probably make quite a silly book, and that sounds awful because I think it's great, and I think it's one of the books of the summer, and I think it's one of those must-reads, and it's fashionable and all that kind of thing. I mean, you know, we all know it's a kind of fictional Fleetwood Mac-y kind of thing, but Audible's kind of changing in the way that I think in the old days people just used to read the books.
Maybe they'd put on a different voice. I'm Daisy!
Oh, I'm the man. Well, this is cast. This has got a full cast of people. So, you know, Daisy Jones is played by one actress. I think she's quite famous as well. You see, narrated by Sarah Arrington, Jennifer Beals, Arthur Bishop, etc., etc. There's a full cast. It's properly produced. It sounds not like a play, but creeping towards.
Yeah.
With sound effects and, well, not quite sound effects, you know, car doors aren't smacking and all that kind of thing. But it's wonderful.
I can see how it really lends itself to that.
Because
I liked reading it.
There's even a bonus track at the end.
Oh, the music from the... Oh, I might have to listen.
Yeah, I tell you, honestly, it's knocked... Jeff and I absolutely adored that. Because I did the Audible of my own book because I needed the money. And I got this terrible sort of stab of envy when they said, oh, we're thinking about asking Tamsin Gregg. And she's brilliant, Tamsin Gregg. But I thought, no, sod it, I want to do this. And it's also 1,200 quid, which I could do with. And I was 3 days in there, solid though. I mean, it's because Inheritance is a big fat book. And then I got there, and of course she goes, so are you comfortable with all the accents? And I suddenly thought, what accents? There's not many accents in this, is there? And then I realised, of course, there's Peggy, who's the American heiress. There's American. There's Brenda, the Cornish housekeeper, so there's Cornish. And then suddenly all these sort of smaller B characters creep out of the woodwork. And I think, oh, God. But we eventually got it. We did have to have a few tries with the American.
So are you thinking that for your next book, it's going to be sort of people who've grown up in a bunker, all speaking exactly the same?
I mean, I'd love to eventually write something where, you know, if not cast, but I do think that is the direction things could be going in.
Bigger, aren't they?
They are. Mm. There's more and more, you know, people are doing... Audible is booming, which is fantastic.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
We'll be back to Jenny soon, but now it's time for my Steal of the Week, a book so hot that the Jenner sisters would bring out a Swarovski-studded limited edition version of it, if such a thing were possible. This week, it's Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl by Andrea Lawler, published by Picador. Paul is a polysexual shapeshifter who sometimes becomes poly, falling in and out of love in the early 90s, chasing physical and spiritual fulfillment while making liberal use of other people's wardrobes and cash registers. This reminds me a little bit of Sarah Schulman and Armistead Maupin, but it really is like nothing I've ever read. It's funny and strange and playful at a time when there is a lot of anxiety and fury connected with public conversations around gender and identity. This makes the reader ask questions in a sweet, gentle and considered way. This book has a celebration of queerness at its core. That's Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl, published by Picador. Now, back to Jenny.
See, I have no nerd in me at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Actually, the opposite. And no, I'm not sensible and not very well behaved. And the more people I meet along the way and the more I do my podcast and have guests on, I realise I was a nightmare.
For the lack of...
Just lack of caring about anybody. Just no conscience. But then terrible guilt, my own conscience, but absolutely, yeah, just a very badly behaved person.
But that does sound like great fun. I wanted to ask, what did you, when your daughter was growing up, did you read her stories?
No,
or did she?
I was out at night.
So.
And she learnt to read pretty quickly. I was, when Phoebe was a small girl, she was born in 89, and that sort of coincided with me. I was only 28, near 29. And I realised that babies were very, very boring. And I was desperate to get back to my career. And it was a real kind of watershed moment of thinking, oh, God, I thought I really wanted a baby. Now I've got one. I really want to be a stand-up. So same dilemma I have now between stand-up and writing. And I'm very lucky. Jeff is a very good father. And he would basically... I paid for a nanny or childcare during the day. Then he'd come home from, he was the art director of the TV Times, he'd get home and take over the baby. You know, and it worked, but I couldn't have had more than one. So, yeah, I mean, Phoebe was read to by her father, me a bit, but I was always one eye on the clock and always going off to gig. And then Vanessa, her nanny.
So you were sort of, so, oh, maybe... So Goldilocks has finished her porridge, but the bears aren't going to get home. That's her done. She's off out.
Yeah, but except she had very modern books. And then she just became a voracious reader herself. You know, she ended up doing English at Oxford. So she was, you know, a child of Harry Potter. Harry Potter coincided with her seventh birthday, I think. So that was, you know, I think she got about 8 copies of Harry Potter for her 7th birthday.
I hope you kept them all somewhere special.
I hope there are a few. And then Jacqueline Wilson, of course, you know, and she could be left. She was a very typical lonely child. I lived very near King's College Hospital, so that was an ambulance. A rather needy one, yeah.
Yes,
they make some very strange noises.
Very
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Oh, Farewell, My Lovely, narrated by Ray Porter. I've just really barely dabbled in the audiobook pool. And this is making me think, you know, there's so much here.
This is a couple of years' worth of books. It's very difficult, because I felt when you were coming around, I thought, oh, God, she's going to think that I'm sort of totally a non-reader. I mean, we'll have a little wander around, and so. But as you can see, I live in a very modern house, and it's not small, but it's not big, and it hasn't got alcoves. You know, it's not a Victorian house with a mantelpiece and an alcove on either side. And Jeff's a bit selfish. I mean, you know, he has this huge collection of art books which are on just about every available space. Even if you go in downstairs bathroom, there must be several thousand.
So right now, we're sat on the sofa and I can see a table and it's piled so high with beautiful art books. You can't really see, I can only just see that it is a table.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably about 50 there. I mean, we have more coffee table books than most people would have in a lifetime. You know, he sells mid-20th century prints, you know, www.20thcenturyprints.com. So there's lots of architecture books as well, because he spent a long time as a designer doing up other people's houses. He's a he was an art director at the TV Times, made redundant at 52, and built this house. So, I mean, obviously with an architect, but he did the inside. Any Victorian house, you know, that he can smash the back off and put a glass box on, he's done.
Has he ever been on Grand Designs?
No, this house won a Mansa Medal. Kevin has been here because of doing the Channel 4 House of the Year and all
Kevin.
That.
Kevin, you're on very casual first name terms with Kevin. No, what kind of car?
It's just a crappy old Mercedes.
Crappy old Mercedes.
I mean, I've never spent more than $2,500 on a car. I think it was something he used it on, because he has a place in the country. And I think it was something that, you know, he just sort of used. Anyway, bought a car off him, but it got vandalised and
that's not the one that just got.
No, that we've lost loads of cars. We've lost about 8 cars. It's a London tax, isn't it? Yeah, so as you can see, but I can take you around some shelves if you'd like.
Oh, yes, please.
Right.
Let's do that. I'm going to give you...
I think we should go to the very top. Yes. A lot of things have migrated. So if we take... There's a small bookcase here. This is really good for us, because I'm realising how much space Jeff owes me. So again, most of this bookshelf is his. There's a few copies of mine, though, which is a bit sort of... I think I've got some things in foreign languages. I don't even know which book this one is. Because is that French?
That looks like French to make
the secrets of
a Desperate Woman.
Yeah, you see, I haven't ever written a book called The Secrets of a Desperate Woman. I think it might be moving. I've really no idea, but it didn't work. The title moving didn't work in French or whatever, so they retitled it. So, yeah, there's...
Do you know what's the most unexpected language you've been translated into? Is there any particular deal where you're like, oh, now I can...
I think Polish surprised me, and it made it really, really long as well. It was huge. I think they had to do a bit of an edit, otherwise it was going to be sort of 1,000 pages long. One of my favourite artists here is a guy called George Shaw. Well, he paints in umbral paint, which is, you know, the Airfix model paint. But they're big pictures, and it's just sort of very urban, very suburban, very bit of a look at a desolate, slightly, you know, lots of council houses and bus stops and things like that. And he's so clever. Mostly art books again.
I
yeah.
I can see Adrian Mole down there as well.
Oh, well, I think that's a family favourite of us all. I think, you know, the three of us are Mole fans. You can't not be. The 30th anniversary edition.
I do love that colour.
I think we've probably got.
Is that the first one?
It's the age 13 and three quarters.
Oh, is that the one that might have my favourite bit about the Red Sox and wearing them secretly under other socks, and then finding that I picked it up.
How
the
old
other
are
day.
You?
I'm 34.
Yes, you see, it's not gone yet. Mine's got massive, great holes in it, like a cheese.
No, I cheated because I've read that relatively recently. I'm not remembering it from the first time I read it when I was probably 36. I do. I'm rereading Love, Nina at the moment because I was craving a bit of a comfort read. Do you reread or
no,
you one
I
and
don't.
Done?
I don't reread.
I wonder if that's a bit different for audiobooks.
No, well, remember, I do have a history of non-audio books as well. These are all our wallpaper city guide books. I like a city break, but they're very fashionable, these wallpaper city things. They're totally useless.
The trouble is, you sort of have to collect them all. It's like Happy Meals for grown-ups. They only look good if you've got every single one.
The whole thing, yes. And they're monstrously unreliable, and they can sue me for that. Now, you know, a great deal of middle-aged women will have more than two recipe books, but this basically shows, it's not my entire collection, but probably your mother has, how many recipe books do you think your mother has?
More than two.
Yeah, I think I've got a few more up here, but they're totally out of reach, so I've got about six up there.
In terms of how many does my mum use? Probably not more than two.
Yeah, there you go. I only use the Jamie Oliver five recipes, five ingredients.
What's the maddest thing you've bought having a go at an Ottolenghi?
I just look at it, and by the time I get to the end of the ingredient list, I have to go and lie down. And that's Ottolenghi simple. I haven't attempted a single one of them.
There is no nearly full sticky pomegranate molasses from 2015 around the place.
So there are always books sort of on the stairs and things like that.
I'm going to have a little peek. See what I... got Barbara Kingsolver, the Lacuna, and what appears to be Five Go Parenting.
Oh! Well, I do get sent stuff as well. This is one that I really want to read that I was sent. I'm a big fan of Jill Dawson. I think she's really good. The Language of Birds.
I don't know her, but that looks great.
Oh, well, she was... She wrote a book some years ago that did really well called Fred Needy, which was based on a true life case of a murder of a woman and her lover killing the husband.
I was going to say, do you like a murder? That sounds wrong.
I do like a murder to a certain extent, but I don't like gore. And this is my study, and there's not much I have to say. This is really, really bad. It looks like I don't read at all.
Well, no, there's loads in here. Is that you in Polish?
Yeah,
Is that Paweł Deska?
I think that might... No, that's definitely not, because I speak German.
I'm looking at the wrong one, I think.
Blue underneath. Die Liebe. I can't see it. It's too high up for me. Uns bleibt. Loves we left, but we have remained, or the love we that still remains, something like that. Alice Munro short stories. My daughter has a play in this National Theatre Connections collection.
Oh, cool.
Phoebe Eclair Powell, there we go. And it's for schools. They do it every couple of years.
Oh, so did it get toured around?
Basically they commissioned about eight young writers to write pieces for schools, and the schools choose which they want to do. So hers was a climate change. It was called These Bridges. It's about when the Thames Barrier floods and all the kids from North London come over to South London because they've heard it's better and there's still Wi-Fi over here. And they all meet in the middle and there's a big chorus of drowned commuters. She's clever.
That does sound like a play we all need to see.
Yes, it was just great for schools. I mean... There's nothing very exciting.
I see here. More city guides. Are they wallpaper ones as well, or different ones?
Yes, no, they're more useless wallpaper guides that send you off to fashionable bars that closed 6 months ago. Oh, there's my first book. This is the book about behaviour.
Oh, brilliant. Look at you. Look at that gorgeous picture. Oh, and you've got parental advisory. That very sought after.
Yeah.
So find my listening taste.
I wrote this when I was about your age, you see, and I just thought that... I was the cleverest person.
Slag lingerie.
All my pants are now crotchless due to the gussets having rotted away. Yeah, well, it's sort of
acquired
taste, that one. Then there's a few sort of nature things, like looking after birds. I don't really want a bird. That'd be awful to keep birds. But I've got very interested in wildflowers. So there's a book on wildflowers there. And I... annuals and biennials and garden birds and trees, pocket birds. I want to be able to recognise things better. I think.
So is that it? Do they come into the garden? Do you have any regular visitors?
We have, honestly, you wouldn't know that this was South East London. This is a menagerie. There's a lot of wildlife. It's teeming. It's teeming with stuff. So we're going to go through... We'll go upstairs, actually, because that's where...
While we're on the way up, I was going to ask, I saw your... Because I know you talked about writing with people before.
Yeah, Grumpy Old Couples was a book I wrote with Judith Holder. Judith Holder was the producer of the Grumpy TV series, and then we wrote all the Grumpy live TV shows, which were kind of madly successful and went round the world and, you know, ended up in Australia and... one was translated into Icelandic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. We were in Iceland watching Icelandic women doing it. It was great.
Amazing.
It was amazing. There was a few things where you look back and go, actually, no, that was amazing.
Because I think it would have sort of felt like a dream or something. Was that really happened?
Yeah, that was outrageous. That was one of those very rare things where you'd go, oh, no, this is fantastic. And Judith and I do the podcast Older and Wider together.
Yeah. What's it like writing with someone else? What are the fun bits and what are the hard bits?
I always did it with Julie Bellew as well, when earlier on with a bit of radio drama. Mm. I very seldom write with somebody in the room. What happens is you write a bit, I write a bit, and then I'm a bit of a control freak. I tend to do the marrying, what I call... I think it's meant to be editing, but we call it the marrying, so we marry two bits together. And then there's a basic... golden rule is that if she doesn't like what I've done, she's allowed to take bits out and put bits in. And then, you know, there's not got to be too much argument. With Judith and I writing together with Grumpy Old Women, it was definitely, you know, she'd write a chunk, I'd write a chunk, then I'd sort of marry the chunks together. And then it would go to the rehearsal room and whatever worked stayed in. You know, it's much easier if there's some performers on stage and you're listening in a rehearsal room, and if it doesn't make you laugh, it's out. It's quite easy to be brutal.
I suppose, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, having, you know, being a writer and a performer makes it easy to kind of kill your darlings, as it were, that you can sort of, it's having an ear for it rather than thinking, but my beautiful sentence.
There's not much in here, actually. Let's take you upstairs because, as I say, that's where, you know, most of...
I love this fabulous shiny, shiny wallpaper.
Yeah, that's quite exciting. I mean,
everything's...
Yeah,
this is Jeff.
Hello.
Hello again.
Mostly battleships.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of war history, lots of battleships as well.
Oh, my goodness. Look at this. I don't know if we can...
Oh, wow.
It's a roof terrace.
Yes, I know. It's a massive redecoration. This is Phoebe's lair. I mean, you know, she's 30. It's time all this was cleared out. And Jeff and I had a studio up here, but she does come back. So
I'm so jealous in this room. That is it's like what you'd have in, I don't know, a gift shop or a museum. Like, this is for, you know, magazines or pamphlets or souvenirs or something.
It's a rotating, yes, magazine rack, which we found on a road in Peckham. It actually smells. So, I mean, there's a mixture of Phoebe's stuff and my stuff up here. So things that she's borrowed from me. But then there's a mixture of her college stuff, you know. The
masses and masses of drama here.
A huge amount of, and poetry.
I love that you've got Angela Carter is on top of I'm Alan Partridge.
Yeah, Phoebe's a huge Partridge fan and a huge Angela Carter fan. I mean, if there were two things that summed her up, it is those two things. It is a mix of... This is a great book by another female stand-up that I don't think probably got the attention or plaudits it deserved. And that's Nina Is Not Okay by Shappi Kaur Sandi, which is a great book. It really is. It's a super book about... being out of control. I mean, I really do recommend it. And I think it's required reading for any sort of 17-year-olds. It's so kind and it's so understanding and it's so, you know, somebody like myself who's, you know, borderline addict with everything, I kind of broke my heart. I think it's marvellous.
I've heard so many good things about that book and this is the push I need. I'm actually going to read it now.
I really would. I mean, it won't take you long. You know, it's not
that's
hard.
My favourite whenever anyone says that. A couple of days, afternoon.
Yeah, so there's a big pile there and then there's this pile. Yeah, I mean, this is ludicrous. I suppose this is where the books that I don't want to throw away have ended up. You know, there's a bit of Martin Amis there. I'm not sure really how I feel about him. Irving Welsh, Esther Freud, Andrea Levy.
What is it about Martin Amis? Because I think I'm the same, where... When I was younger, I used to like Martin Amis, I think, to make boys fancy me. And now I'm like, gone off him a bit.
I just think that, I think that...
Never worked, by the way.
What didn't?
like reading Martin Amis made no one fancy me. No.
I think that the press has changed a bit. It's breaking down slightly. I think that there was so much snobbery in the past. I really do. I think that unless you were blue blood literati, you didn't... I mean, it's still hard, and I still get quite resentful, but I think they are getting better. I do think they are shining a light on a more diverse amount of authors. There's quite a bit of Agatha Christie. I think Phoebe likes a bit of Agatha Christie.
Oh, I like that Crime Club edition there.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Proper brown paper cover. Yeah, yeah. A little bit of Evelyn Waugh did that at school.
Visit from the Goon Squad, I love.
I think Jennifer Egan's really good. I read her last one as well. I mean, she's incredible at choosing subjects that you wouldn't go near naturally. Her last one was about being a female deep sea diver. Like, you know, one of those ones with the big helmets on. I mean, it was mad. It was like, how do you even know how to start?
You see, I hear that and I just think, well, that's many years of research.
I don't want to do
the research.
Yeah, yeah. So I do give most of the books away. But, I mean, if I was stuck for stuff, I'd come up here. But I'm never stuck for stuff.
Is that a book called Bonk? Or Honk?
I should think it's Bonk. Where is that?
It's blue, Mary Roach, just here.
I don't know that. That's one of hers. Have you read Wetlands? That's filthy.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember when
that came out.
It's a real sort of...
She cannot stop shoving things up her vagina, basically. Until, isn't she in hospital and she's kind of putting a chair leg up
this
there or something?
Rings a vague bell. Yeah.
She kind of... Oh, no, it's sore. It's a very sore book. Mm. Yeah.
Have you read, when I read quite recently, what's her name? It's translated. She wrote Lullaby, Layla Simani.
Yes.
Adele.
I know, but I have read Lullaby, which I really enjoyed the beginning of, and then I thought it went off. I thought the beginning was great.
I didn't read Lullaby, but what I liked about...
Don't worry.
Is that I thought for a second that was a Harry Potter box, but I think it's just going
to be
an
ancient
German design.
Yes, it's be a gingerbread box or something, or Christmas cookies.
That's the trouble now, isn't it? You see a lovely, romantic, beautifully lit, medievally building, and you think, oh, it's Hogwarts.
But I like her, though. I didn't think that I would like J.K. Rowling as a sort of the Robert Galbraith. But the Lethal White, which is her last one, on Audible, it's 36 hours long. It's fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you've got the longest car journeys in the world going on, that'll see you through. There's loads of things I recommend. I used to love Faye Weldon. I think that for me, as a 20-something, Faye Weldon was a huge influence.
I don't know if you agree or not, but I feel as though she was so fashionable, and I think she's really due a bit of a
renaissance.
Hey,
yeah.
I don't mean some people might say she never went away, but I don't know that she is. I think she deserves a second look or a third look.
I think it would be nice for all her books or a collection of them to be republished with fabulous covers as a collection. That's sold in girl posh bookshops.
Yeah. Do some intros.
Yes, I'll do some intros. I mean, I think that sort of her, Jilly Cooper, are probably my... and a bit of Penny Vincenzi thrown in.
Penny Vincenzi, I love that sort of genre. It's the boardroom bunkbuster in the business. But, I'm in a Jilly Cooper book club that is dedicated to... Because we are such super fans. And I read and reread her fairly frequently. Again, I just had a bit of a comfort reread of The Man Who Made Husbands Jealous. But was she
definitely an influence on me, yes. And I met her recently because she was at the Comedy Women in Print Awards. And, being absolutely hilarious. She did a hilarious little speech and told a fabulously filthy joke. And was very, very funny. But apparently she's a Brexiteer. But anyway, we've got to let that go. It doesn't matter.
She's not keen on feminists.
It's a kind of feminist.
So it's not like you will hear their leg hair before you see them.
Yeah, but she is really... She doesn't understand what she is really.
Yeah.
It's that slightly frustrating. It's like my mother saying, because she's 19, started talking rubbish and saying, the trouble with all these female politicians, they're so strident. And I go, of course you're fucking strident. They're trying to be fucking heard, Bit of Jonathan Franzen there.
I have never... I don't think I've ever finished a Jonathan Franzen
cliché. That's the advice that makes two of us.
I'm really, really glad I didn't pretend that, oh, yes, Jonathan Franz.
No, I've tried to get in that into that about three times.
Isn't that maddening, though, isn't it? Because I feel like Gilly, for all her Brexitiness, has taught me so much about life and love and people and emotions and the multifaceted, all of the things about
Jonathan
being human. Jonathan Franzen.
Yeah, it leaves you a bit cold. It's all over complicated, but, you know, this is... If you write popular fiction, I mean, Marion Keyes is very good on all this. Mm. If you write popular fiction as a woman, you are dismissed to a certain extent. Or a few people are picked as being the chosen ones.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us are sort of left to go, why isn't my book in Waterstones? Is there anything else you need to see?
Was there any... I thought you mentioned downstairs toilet books.
Oh, yeah, but they are all...
I'm always keen on toilet books.
Always just trying to get in people's toilets. They never want us to go. I don't know why. These are crackers, I see. A vast, vast Lucian Freud book. Vanity Fair's Hollywood. That sounds fancy, that.
Stanley Spencer. I like Stanley Spencer. Alexander Calder, who invented the mobile. Lucian Freud. I mean, you can't go wrong with a bit of Lucian Freud. Edward Hopper. I mean, basically, whenever Jeff goes to an exhibition, if he likes it, he will always buy the book.
What's that picture above the books?
Oh, that's one of mine.
Did you paint that?
Yeah, it's one of my acrylics.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Oh, do you like it?
I was going to sort of... I was thinking that's a contemporary artist I should know.
No.
That's beautiful. I love those colours.
Well, the colours are very David Hockney, aren't they? That blue is very very Hockney blue.
Yes.
But that was the colour of the Moroccan sky. No, we went on a painting holiday. Yeah, that's one that Jeff approved of.
Well, I imagine he sets the bar high.
Oh, he sets the bar very high. Most of it has to be hidden away.
Huge thanks to Jenny. Follow her at Jenny Eclair, all one word, on Twitter. Run to your bookshop and buy Inheritance Now. It will delight and infuriate you and stay in your head. I'm looking at the book at the moment and my shoulders almost disappear inside my ears when I read the name Peggy Carmichael because it makes me so tense. Find out why. I'm Daisy Buchanan and I've been your book inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, library lovers. You can find me on Twitter at NotRollerGirl and on Instagram at TheDaisyB. Say hello, suggest some guests and watch out for shelfies. Visit our show page, acast.com/booked, for more information about our guests and a list of the books they've talked about. If you have any other queries about the podcast, you can email us at whybooked@gmail.com. Your Booked is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us and leave a review. It's great to hear what you think and it helps other people to find the podcast. For now, I leave you with these words from Bukowski. I often carry things to read so I will not have to look at people.
Hey there! Did you know Ralph's always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Ralph's app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Ralph's today. Ralph's, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.